Welcome to Starving Nurse On Call. I'm Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games, of an SLB Online, Dead Come Online, and Starved League Warlord. Just a minute, join us with a talk cast every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone to dial 605-562-0444 to follow the directions, call 817-702. Or you want to participate on the web, just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshow.com and search for call 817-702. Or actually, what I would really do, because the search doesn't seem to be working that well. Or at all. I'm not sure. But I would go for, like, I think it's the next, upcoming. I think it's upcoming. That's what it is. I should be there. Because I always schedule for my next date. And that's actually, I'm one of the few ones that does this. So it's up and coming on the website. But if you want the best online experience, what you want to do, you want to go to twitch.tv, twitch.tv/SFUOnCall, and you'll find us there, and you'll be able to join the chat room and watch my lovely face. Hopefully it won't break your screen. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is SFUOnCall@gmail.com. That's SFUONCALL@gmail.com. Also, follow me on the Twitter /X/whatever it might be called this week. You can follow the podcasting account at SFUOnCall. Or you can follow my personal account, Paul Franz, PaulFranz. Or you can follow my Franz Games business account, FranzGames. There's no T in that. But if you also, if you're over on Blue Sky, I have accounts there too. On Blue Sky, it's sfuoncall.bsky.social. Also, that's for the podcasting account, also my personal account and business account is franzgames.com. Of course, the lovely Talkcast gets into a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Quick news from ADB. Steve Petrick is home from the hospital, actually doing well, actually is getting some work done. Albert was working on, he got Act of 3 ready for Gene to edit and go through. Steve Cole was working on a Civil War scenario with four Civil Wars, F&E Civil Wars. And they worked on some more updating of the modules. And actually what was mentioned by Steve Cole is that he might have to farm out some of the updates to the modules. My guess is some people that are well-known and trusted individuals to help work on those products. Moving onward and forward, when it comes to found online store this week, Planet and Base Cards. This is for the Federation. Sorry, this is for the Battle Force. This is what this is for. They're $2. There are 6 Planet cards and 6 Battle Station cards, as seen in the article for Capsule Log number 23. You'll need a Capsule Log 23 rules to use these cards. The rules also can be downloaded from our website. They've got these rules on the website, so you don't have to buy Capsule Log number 23. You can get them for free. Now, these are double-sized 4.5 by 3.5 inch cards. They're black and white. No coating stock. They are more plastic placemats than cards and cannot be shuffled. So, but read the rules. I don't remember exactly what these cards were used for. They're used for Battle Force. I forget why. The rules. Moving on and forward, when it comes to SFB Online tournaments, the 500 BPV tournament is still going strong. I'm pretty sure that Dana and Eddie, they got some more turns in. Justin and I will hopefully get together this weekend. I've got to replied to his email. He was too busy this week to get together this week. So that is what it is. I did do some work on the online client stuff when it comes to things like the ability to select ships from the command line, which is cool. And then because you can, as pointed out on like last week's episodes, you can actually do like /right/left. So you can turn the ships that are selected, the current selection of ships, turn left, turn right, whatever. which is nice. There's something that actually I think might be a good idea for that stuff, but you know, I'll probably talk about that a little bit during the later on in the podcast. And of course, when it comes to the library report, Frank actually, they're gonna be he's starting up a new campaign. He's shutting down the old one, starting up a new one. But he looked at the Tholians and went, "They're a mess." They were one of his first efforts, so he went, "I need to redo these because these look awful." Which, by all means, go do them. And I appreciate that Frank didn't say, "Well, they're already done. They're here, whatever." But he's wants them to look good, and I appreciate that. Thank you, Frank, for wanting to redo the Tholians. And there's no updates for the Federation Commander library. I know I still got to put in the FRD. I got to put that in the library, and I apologize for how long it's been taking me to get that done. And with that is the news for this week. It's me, yes, the one and all Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we have Doug. Say hi, Doug.
Hi, Doug.
And of course, we have me. Who else do you need? There's nobody. But anyhow, wrong way. Don't mind me. There it is, live. Trying to get myself set up over here. Remember to actually turn down the volume first, which is good. But anyway, this week, actually, I want to start off with a really quick review on what I've done with the client when it comes to accessibility. Just really quick, it's not going to be very long. After that, I got to figure out what I'm else going to talk about. We'll figure out something. Don't worry. Yes, I do things on the fly a little bit, and it is what it is. But anyhow, I did work on some of the chat commands. The one I worked on was select and deselect. I'm not happy with what I did, so I need to change a little bit, because of what I'm not happy about is because of currently it uses it's actually quite powerful, and it's really which is really quite cool, but for the normals in the audience and normals in that I can use the client, it might be just a little too powerful. Because basically what I defaulted to using Java's internal, Java's regular expressions to select things and deselect things. And to have people actually understand and use regular expressions as documented by Java, I think it is a little high for most people. And I think for most people, what they're going to want to do is something that well akin to a very dumb wild card approach. I'm not sure. It's more like it reminds me of the one I'm thinking of anyway. Is for those who've been with us for a long time and actually remember how to do things on in DOS. The Windows, it's there too. Windows on the command line. That's the same thing. But it started back in the days of DOS. And what that is was that, okay, simple wild cards are a question mark for, okay, a letter, any character that you want is a question. You put a question mark, that's any character. And then you can use star, asterisks to say, okay, any number of characters. Before, and usually you have like a text string and then maybe a star or something like that. And if you don't end that string, that select string, not with a, if it's regular letter or starts with a regular letter or ends with a regular letter, it starts with that. With regular expressions, a little different. if you type in a word, it basically it's akin to what would be considered a contains operator, where you've got a carrot, letters, and that, if that word, that in the case, in this case, the I'm using the labels for the names of the units. So if I say like Bop, that's the name of the ship, Bop. Now if I say select Bop, what happens, it'll select both Bop and Bop's point of turn and Bop's point of slip. It's like, that's not what the person meant. So I went, that's kind of, I need to make, I was going to, I originally, the plan, I actually did do work on this, which is have it to, it excludes point of turn and point of slip. But at the moment, I'm thinking that's less, if I get it right, I think it's less of a concern. Of that. And there might be, actually, sometimes you might actually want to have those selected. Because, like in the case of, okay, you might want to select them to delete them. Because in some cases, some people like they, they're when they sit still, when they go to speed zero, they don't want their pointer slip and the pointer turn counters. So they'll delete them. So there's less counters on the board. Now, obviously, as I told many weeks ago, a few weeks ago now, not a long time ago, but it's been, oh, maybe a month. Which was, those super duper useful and dangerous keys, which will hide things, hide and show them, which is good and bad, as was pointed out. I pointed out both in the post I did on the discussion board, and also I pointed out here, which is the whole issue is that you can hide like seeking weapons. Problem: if you forget to show them, you will never see any seeking weapons, and your ship might get blown up because you didn't see them. Because the hiding and showing is only on your screen, not on your opponent's screen. Which, of course, if it did affect your opponent's screen, I'm sure your opponent would totally flip out, which is why it's one of those local things, And the whole idea of those are just to clean up the board, make it so that when you're trying to make a decision about what you want to do with the units, that you got a clear picture of, get rid of miscellaneous units. For example, in some cases, shuttles, just push them off to the side because you don't care about them at the moment, so you want to hide them. In some cases, actually, it allows you to actually hide the ships too if you want. Okay, you're not concerned about the ships at the moment; you're just concerned about the all the fighters and all of the drones that are on the board, things like that. Obviously, the nice one is getting rid of the point of turn and point of sleep counters for everything, for all the units, so that cleans up things on the board tremendously. I mean, it keeps them around, so if you want to see them, you can see them. I forget when it comes to the client. Whether if you disable tracking, I think, yeah, you turn off tracking because that's actually an option when you add a unit. There's a checkbox with track position. And the tracking is about adding those point of slip and point of turn, which are supposed to be helpful. And a lot of times they are. To me, the point of turn is helpful. Point of slip is ultimately helpful. If you really want to, when it comes to point of turn, you actually, there is a column you can add to the game control, which will tell you how many moves that unit has moved forward, so, i.e., since the last time it turned. So, this is, very useful. But anyway, I'm going to be modifying I got the select and deselect going. And no, it works quite cool. It's quite well. I like it. I'm going to change it to what the current implementation. I'm going to change that to be a command called A select, i.e., advanced select, stand for advanced select, and A deselect, which is Advanced Deselect. Which gonna, if, for those of you who like the regular expressions and the power that they offer, the full power of them, I'll give you that option. But otherwise, what I'm going for, I think for the normals, for the normies, those people who don't deal with code every day, and don't even understand what regular expressions are, because they're a very powerful tool. They can be a very powerful tool. That just given the dumbed down version of wildcards. And I think that will be useful for most circumstances. So I want to actually enable that too. I was just thinking about it, which is the function keys. For those of you who don't know, there's function keys on the game control. Well, that's what they represent. You'll see a button say F1, F2, F3, F4, F4, blah, blah. Those are what I call selection groups. So if you press, like, you do a selection, and then you say, then you on the game control, it's easy. We just check on set key. Then you press the button that you want that key associated with, and then that selection group is there. It's set. Then you unset. Then you got to remember to undo that checkbox, the set key checkbox. And that means anytime you press that button or press that key, like if it's F2 key, then if you press your F2 key, it will select those units that are associated with the F2 key. And I was thinking about maybe I might want to add that functionality into the command line, the commands, because currently you can do selection individually through that, but also have it so they can do the function key selects and say and just enable them, possibly, or at least assign them. I would think that'd be more important than actually doing a select based on that function key, on that function key group, selection group, because you can actually just press the key and that should do that. That should automatically select those units. But anyway, that's going on with the client. I just wanted to do a quick update when it comes to that. I didn't want to spend the whole time talking about the client and accessibility stuff, which I'm still very interested in improving. I definitely want to get going on the one feature, which is for the chat command, which is the radar feature, and also the changing the firing. Actually, there's going to be two changes to the fire decision table. And that is, one, it's going to tell you whether that weapon is in arc, can actually hit the ship that you just selected. Hit the target that you just currently selected. That's one. It's not like I'm gonna disallow it if it isn't, because there's other possibilities that you can do. For example, when it comes to Andromedan in theory, one. It just happened. Nothing. I think I brought up. The S lady. There is a possibility when it comes to the Andromedans that you might actually want to fire your weapon to drain the energy out of it. It's a strange concept for most people, except for the Andromedans, which is you can actually fire your weapon at a place in space. Basically,
discharge.
But actually, you have phasers. You can't discharge. You have to fire.
Okay.
So if you fire it, you have to to discharge the capacitor. It's as a firing, so that you can't use that weapon again for the next 8 impulses, or until next turn, depending. But you might want to be able to do that in the client and have it so the target's actually yourself. strange thing, but you can do that. And it might say, oh, you're not in your own arc. So in that case, yeah, doesn't matter. But it's not going to stop you. That's one change. The other change, I realized when it comes to accessibility, I need to have a separate column, which actually denotes the status of those weapons. Currently, it's actually quite nice for those who are sighted, which is that if the state of that weapon is destroyed, it's highlighted in red. That's great. One, if you're not colorblind, you know, if you can't see red, they're going to notice. That's two. And also, if you're blind, you don't know if that weapon is considered destroyed. So, you know, these are the kind of accessibility stuff that if you're concerned about accessibility, these are the things you start thinking about. When it comes to EVE Online, I'm not sure how accessible that thing is. My guess is it's not accessible at all.
Oh no, they have accessibility options.
Oh, I have to look at that. Because as I pointed out a bit ago, actually probably that, I think practice last week. What am I talking about? And that is the cool thing about accessibility is that you don't have to have issues with accessibility. You know, be blind, be deaf, whatever, to take advantage of those things that the accessibility features offer. It can improve things for everybody, not just those that need those features. For example, one thing I'm not sure. Yeah, you probably see it. For those of you who are not that are on the video, you can see it, which is currently my screen for my phone is black and white. I do that purposefully because I don't want it to be a distraction to me. I don't want to be sucked into it. So making it black and white, it decreases the likelihood I'm going to want to hold, you know, watch videos and all this kind of things because all those colors are gone. Now, that's not why that Apple introduced the idea of a black and white color filter. That mainly is for higher contrast, is to help contrast things better for certain people, especially, you know, those people who are colorblind, you know, or have other issues, you know, things like that, which are benefit to everybody. But anyhow, I'm not gonna go down that whole again this week because I'm sure some of you are going, oh, accessibility again, oh really? You know, but no, I'll lay off it. So the one thing that when it comes to the client that I thought of with accessibility, which is interesting. I'd actually like to see if this is even possible. Now, it's almost seems like it's testing accessibility, which is, I know a lot of you know that me personally, I like Zork. I like those text-based adventures from way back in the day. Let me see. They were originally came out
in the 70s, yeah.
The 70s?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, geez. Oh,
yes, we are that old. Thank you.
Sorry, it's pouring down rain here.
No, that's okay. I remember that one from hanging out in a hobby shop and being introduced to it there. In the 70s.
In the 70s. Wow. Yeah.
So.
Wow. Yeah, that'd be on the mainframes. back in the 70s.
Well, they actually had PCs start coming out in the late 70s, early 80s.
Most of it was definitely in the 80s. Because that's when the Apples were in the 80s.
And the Amigas.
The Amigas, yeah. Yeah. But anyway,
some other things.
Yeah. I'm fascinated with that. And the question is, of course, for me, which is, can you actually have a chat interface which lets you play Starfleet Battles? Which, you know, the whole idea of basically remove the actual board and just use a chat log. Can it be done? Is it usable? You know? It should be interesting, especially because as we noted last week when it comes to radar, the whole idea of radar is the idea is that you type a command and say, okay, what unit do you want to be the focal point? You know, that it's quote-unquote emitting the radar from that unit. But that's going to show like angles and distance between that unit and the different units that are around it. Obviously, the one thing I got to remember to do for that is I'm assuming that most people want to filter out like point of slip and point of turn. So I'll probably leave that alone. But can you do it? So that was one of those things that was to me was kind of an interesting idea that came to my head. But anyway,
probably.
Yeah, well, I plan on adding some other ones like a list that actually shows in the chat room. You actually can see a listing of the unit, you know, possibly even using the filters that are currently associated with the game control. Because from my understanding from Zach, a lot of times the game control is not exactly the best. Usability wise, not the best thing, because I've seen that. When it comes to the table itself, it will read the individual cells, and it won't tell you what the header is for that cell. When it comes to this, for you know, obviously like voiceover, when it speaks. What's on the screen? You have a screen reader that does that, and that's fine. But if I could print out the information in the chat log, then it could actually show up. I think it'd be much better. Though the one thing that I'm thinking of, and I like to query Zach about this, whether that'd be a good idea or not. The idea of some of those commands that are used. The output not being, well, it copies itself into the chat log, but also it'll bring up a separate window, which will basically be the result of what the command was. So it would make, in my mind, it would possibly make it easier to read for the screen reader to read. And it'd be, you put that command, what's the result? Okay, it comes up, it'll read the screen and read that. I'm not sure if that works. Will work the way I think it will work. I'll look into it I'll try it like for something small. And that's also one thing I was thinking about doing with come to selects too, which is output what units are selected or deselected due to that command. So, i.e. what did it do? You know, because otherwise you can't see it. You know, I mean even the screen readers, they don't show you what's highlighted and what's not highlighted, at least my understanding of it. But anyway, so enough of that talk at the moment. Justin and I will be getting going on our game hopefully Sunday. I need to chat with him about that. So hopefully I won't die quickly. Obviously from previous discussions about the game, it's And it's one of those things that's going to, I think it's going to go back and forth, what's going to go, which is close in versus going back and forth between close in attacks and further ranged attacks, just because of the reason why I say that is just I think about the plasma torpedoes, and if you try getting close, he's gonna launch them. He's gonna say, well, if you want to get in close, you're gonna have to go through my plasma torpedoes to get through them. And that's exactly what you don't want, because it can be like 20-point torpedoes, which takes a lot of takes a bit of phasers to destroy, versus drones, which are one phaser destroys one drone,
Well, the real question is, where are you advantaged at against them? Is there any particular bracket where you're at an advantage? I think your advantage is probably range 10. And that's just because of bringing the shield breakers in.
Yeah, brings in the
Shield crackers.
shield crackers. Brings in the shield crackers, and also it stays out of his overload range. And at range 10, the plasmas aren't gonna, he's not gonna launch them so they will encounter me at range 10, because of they're gonna be, I don't know, at range,
Waste.
they're gonna be, yeah.
It would be a waste,
Yeah.
potentially.
Yeah, because of how much it'll talk to t take to rearm those plasma torpedoes.
Well,
It
that's not always the consideration. The real consideration is, why do you do it? Do you do it to make it mobile terrain? Like, if he comes in and plops you with all of his, with a whole bunch of long range plinky shots, like he's gonna say, come in and do the oh gosh, the proximity thing. He might launch them at range 10. He might launch just to have the mobile terrain there while he turns away to recharge. You know, just so that, because at that point, if you try to rush him, then you got to go through 40 points of plasma plus, depending on how many he has. He has what, four of them between the two ships? So he could have up to 80 points that you have to choose whether you want to run through it or not. He could also say, screw it, and just say, okay, I'm going to get into the range bracket where I had the best shot with both my proxes and the bolts, and you might bolt all four of them to supplement the proximities. But then again, who knows? He might try to overrun you. It really depends on what's in his mind, what he thinks is in your mind, and which way do you think he's gonna go? And what are you gonna try to do? I mean, one obvious tactic is catch range 10, drop in every single shield cracker on one ship, followed by all of your particle cannons, and see if you can, drop the shield completely with the shield crackers and do as many internals as you can with the remainder. But then, you've got a significant reload thing on those. But on the other hand, if you blow a shield away completely, because they are really good for taking shields down, maybe you can cripple one of his ships or make it go kaboom, depending on your luck and
True.
how well the focus fire of everything else goes.
The
Who
one
knows?
thing, yeah, the one thing I my guess is that Justin is not going to be as passive, meaning he's not going to, speed wise, he's not going to be as slow as my previous opponent. Because my previous opponent, for a long time, he stayed below speed 15. Like, top speed was speed 12 for a while.
Yeah, and that's kind of a very bad thing in a fleet fight like this. Speed is life in this game.
Yeah, I understood. Of course, he had 20 procs photons, so.
Yeah, there is that too. I mean.
And so. it was going four photon torpedoes in a destroyer.
Did you look at his previous fights to see what he did? Do you get to study your opponent's prior engagements at all?
Well, it depends upon if it's been written up.
Okay. I mean, that was just a question, too, because, I mean, that could give you really good insight to what he might do with you.
True. Very true. And I forget if his opponent previously had a scout or not. I don't think he did. I think that was I want to say he faced the Romulan, the old Romulan, ships, which I don't think had any scouts. So he was basically relying on cloaking.
Right, but you don't have a scout.
No, I don't have a scout. He does.
But it's also kind of a weak scout.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be really, really protective of one ship. Or even two. But it's got to stay away from you somewhat.
Right, exactly. As we pointed out the last time we discussed this, which is the scout is definitely going to be laying back a little bit. Even if he does a super stack.
Not going to be stacked, yeah.
He's not going to have his scout in that super stack. He's going.
What is the max range that the scout can actually affect his ships?
At the moment, the number that comes to my head is 15.
Okay.
We're going to find it quick, which is it's G24? No, that doesn't sound right. Oh, actually, yeah. Dang, actually. That is correct. Which is, scout functions are G24.
Yeah.
To do so, well, self protection, he can land himself up to 6 points. Da-da-da.
Yeah, but his protection is going to be distance,
right?
Probably.
Can I use more 12? All right. Okay, 1.43.
For those of you listening to me cough, sorry.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
There was a cold that went through the household last week and then thought it went away. And then this weekend it just said, hi, that's a nice voice you had there.
Okay. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Right. I'm looking. I'm trying to find it. There's got to be it.
What do you want to know?
Well, I want to know, when it comes to lending EW, is there a range?
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah. Which is... What? Right. And they cannot lend it to themselves. Okay. Bum, bum, bum. Generating W can lend. Da, da, da. Okay. Plus 6 points of energy. Bum, bum, bum. Location needs to around. At least one channel. Bum, bum, bum. Channel. I'm looking for something that says there's a limit to the range. There's got to be a limit to the range. There.
Are you looking at the special sensors?
Yes, I'm looking at G24 scout functions.
Okay.
And. Question. Would it be okay if I stopped by on Saturday?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Cool.
I can't guarantee the freshness, but I'll try to have it not to be too horrible.
Okay. Okay.
What time were you thinking?
That's been within 15 hexes.
What time frame were you thinking?
I was thinking about like probably around 1.
Okay. Just give me a text to let me know you're on your way.
Okay. Cool.
Yay.
Okay. Okay, I don't see it. I don't see it. Apologize for those on the podcast going, this is really boring because he's not saying anything.
He's looking up rules. That's the exciting part about SFP. Come on. If they've been around the game that long, they don't need an apology for that.
Well,
quite used to that.
Yeah, they'll be more understanding when it comes to
there you go.
Those kind of things, because I'm sure it wouldn't be the first time where people sat there furiously looking through the rule books. Where is that stinking rule? Or more to the point, you can find the rule, you know, that's related to what weapon you're using. But then you're trying to find out, okay, is there an exception to the rules that indicate this doesn't? Because invariably, you know, when it comes to SFP rules, most of the rules are there is purely just to specifically say what are the interactions between this weapon and this weapon, or this weapon and this system, you know,
and so on. Yeah,
yeah. Because I still remember Steve Cole telling us about that, where when they created first SFB, and then they got people together at the conventions, that it was like, you know, people were kept on asking Steve Cole, what does this rule mean? Because of each group was interpreted the rules in their own way. Because remember, this is pre-internet.
Yep.
So you answered within your own little group. And whatever you, and then you came to an understanding of what the rules meant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember those days.
Yep. And geez, when did Genie come online? I don't remember that. Because I'm pretty sure he was answering questions on Genie about that, but of course not everyone was on Genie at the time. For those of you, this is the back in the dark days of pre-internet, where you actually, if you wanted to communicate with other people outside your area, you had to log into a computer or a computer network of some sort, like one was called CompuServe. And that one actually was a pretty decent one because of it had like bulletin boards where people can post what currently you would is almost like Discord at the moment, where you post things and then you could actually post replies to that post and things like that. It was kind of cool. You know, I forget Yeah, on CompuShare, if I recall correctly, you actually had to have a separate program, which actually allowed you to communicate with that. You know, these bad old days. Jeez, I'm thinking of a bulletin board and how we did that, how we communicate with that. I know we logged in. I think it was like terminal, like little terminal things that would allow you to log in using your modem, and then it would just show
Oh,
you
and you had to go through
text.
the file system.
Yeah.
Oh,
And
I
so,
remember those days.
yeah, and then you had the different kinds of download protocols that could be used, like Z modem, things like that. So, Genie ran from 1985 through 1999, end of 1999. Wow, it actually lasted that long, huh? Lasted until 99. That's a shock. But 85, yeah, that's right after I graduated from high school. So I was in college at the time. I remember those days. Those were the days when we had mainframes at the college, and we also had personal computers. And some of the mainframes were used for like IBM. We have some IBM mainframes which we use for the COBOL course, you know, and which was taken mainly by business majors, but I was a comp sci major. I was looking, and that was one of my elective courses I took was COBOL, which actually is interesting because I actually took the COBOL class after I learned COBOL for my co-op, working for the government down at the Defense Personnel Support Center way back in down in South Philly way back in the day, so.
Wow.
Interesting. Interesting. I'm not sure if we actually ever got anything. I'm not sure if we actually got any work done, to be honest.
I'm sure you got work done
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, because I
of
know
some
part of it
kind.
was actually we had to learn COBOL and some of the JCL. Yeah, I think, did we update some of the screens? Something like that. Because remember, this is also back in the days when they had the IBM terminals. That's where everything was done via those terminals. You know, then you actually had you would actually create screens. It was an interesting system. At this moment, I can't really remember everything about it because it's that long ago. And it was so esoteric. You know, after that job, I never ever was touched it again. Just because it was particular to that job. So anyhow, yeah, so yeah, definitely the Scout presents its own little issues, and as we pointed out, it'd be good if we could just kind of wipe it off the map. That would definitely help in certain situations. Maybe I'll spend some time later. I'll definitely need to spend some time either tomorrow or maybe Saturday, possibly Sunday before we meet up, and look into what's the range factor when it comes to the Scout channels. I'm pretty sure. See, the thing is, even if let's say that the Scout can be like 15 hexes away, there's an issue with being 15 hexes away because now it's basically on its own at that point. It's 16 hexes away from the main unit. You want it enough distance so that it requires quite a bit of effort from me to try to get around the ships that are basically in front of it, you know, the rest of his fleet.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. His ships are basically terrain between you and it.
Right. That
So
and
you have it, your trade-off is that if you want to go for his scout, you have to risk his photons and phasers blowing your ass up on the way.
Right.
Doesn't exactly. matter if he's 10 hexes away. Doesn't matter if he's 15 or 20. I suspect it might actually be something ridiculous like 30. Just off the top of my head, I think.
Ah, there it is. Thank you.
What is it?
Jebba, 99. My guess, I pronounced that really poorly, but AJEBA in the chat room found the rule, which is G24.2181. Oh, yeah. The receiving unit must be within 15 hexes to receive EW points from a scout. The target of the receiving unit's fire must be within 100 hexes of the scout for the receiving unit to use any ECCM it received from the scout. So, and certain terrain can reduce that range, such as asteroids, and we don't have asteroids.
Right.
So, thank you. Thank you, sir, very much.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was right. Actually, when I said 15 hexes, I was correct. Mm-hmm. So, yay.
Which basically sounds right. So, mm-hmm. There's that.
Agreed.
Yay.
But the reason why I say that the scout has to be relatively close, they can't be like 15 hexes away, or even like, let's say, 14. There's a point where it is possible to get around the fleet and get to the scout without imposing at least too much wrath. Obviously, it's initially, yeah. We're going head on. Yeah, no, that ain't gonna happen, because he can adjust for it. But as the battle progresses, there might be a shot if it's that distance, and it has to be close. Now, and I'll agree this because I ran into this issue myself, which is unless you're using the super stack, when you actually start moving the units, you know. In different hexes, you've got to be careful about how you actually maneuver the fleet, because it can be very hard to do that. Just talk to people about the ISC echelon and the whole idea of trying to turn the echelon. Now, I know that on paper it makes sense. But with the SFB rules, it makes no sense to actually do the echelon formation. Because of, it's better to do a super stack. To a certain degree. Depends. Obviously, the one reason why I think they liked the echelon formation was a thing was because the whole idea was to protect the larger ships, because when it comes to a larger fleet battle, that matters. You know, you might actually go after the larger targets because you got enough weapons to actually hurt those targets. You know.
Well, the thing is, you could still hurt that thing. The problem is, you have to let if he's got it 15 away, and he's got his guys between you and it. You trying to get around it puts you at a tactical disadvantage.
Right. Agreed. And that's why, you know, as I said, from the initial battle pass, that it's impossible, no matter where the scout is. But as the battle goes on with us, you know, turning and going around in circles and so forth, to get that tactical advantage of position on your opponent, that's when things get difficult when it comes to protecting the scout and keeping it away from the rest of the fleet and still keeping it close enough.
Well, he's also got the problem of speed.
Trip, very
he's
true.
Going to be using it to lend.
Exactly. Okay.
But on the other hand, he's not going to be using it to shoot you, probably.
Very true. Very true.
unless you guys basically rip each other to shreds to the point where it's worth it for them to take it in there and lend a few weapons on you.
Yeah. Now, actually, that is a question. My guess is, as I said, he's probably launching some ECM drones, possibly even one with the Scout Frigate, because the Scout Frigate has a drone launcher, and they could just launch an ECM drone from his drone launcher and just help protect the Scout itself without using any power whatsoever.
Yeah, and then he's got the Scout as a bonus to go with it.
Right. Exactly.
Well, the problem for you is his Scout might be able to help him cut through any kind of erratic maneuver stuff you do.
Right.
Which almost makes that a waste of time on your part.
Depends.
I mean, it's like points you could put into that might be better off just reinforcing your shield or something.
Mm-hmm. Oh, understood. Yeah, with my last battle, for the most part, I didn't use EM for my larger ships, for my cruisers. I only used my destroyers because of it was advantageous when it comes to amount of power, you know, when it comes to ECM, because ECM is one for one, and when it comes to a destroyer, which has a movement of 50% movement cost, you can get 4 points of ECM for 3 points of power. Now, I think I did it right now. Yeah. 3 points of power. Now, obviously, there's a disadvantage of EM, which everyone knows, i.e., it also produces ECM for you if you're trying to fire while you're also doing erratic maneuvers. So, yeah, that's the main time I use them. Usually, it was just to make sure that he couldn't fire at me. And as it went on, it was really our ECM, the whole electronic warfare thing was weird. Because of as his power decreased, he no longer could keep up his ECCM against my IECM. And so it actually gave me some protection. Overall, when I was able to increase my ECM all the way up to 6, and in some cases, sometimes greater. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think originally the plan was before I screwed up the first turn, to not get within range 30 on the first turn, and then you know. And enable EM and have it so that actually I can come in and he couldn't do a prox photon hit, a strike. Well, because I didn't have all my ships in a super stack, well, one of the ships was just one hex closer than I wanted it. It was range 30 instead of range 31. So, and I paid the price. Dun, dun, dun. Okay. Well, anyway, I think I'm actually pretty tired at the moment, and so I'm gonna shut it down here. Hopefully, I will be able to give a good report when it comes to next week, when it comes to Justin's and my game, and you can see how poorly I did I don't have great hopes for the battle. But hopefully we'll have some fun. So we'll end it there. Doug, is there anything that you want to mention?
Yeah, Gamers of Summer. That's coming up eventually. Anybody wants to send me their event, You can do it through the Facebook thread. You can do it through Messenger on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can use the email that's listed in the website. So there's that. That's Labor Day weekend. We'll be at the Red Lion Hotel in Swatara, which is Harrisburg, basically.
Right.
We were there the last couple of years. It's a really nice venue.
It's a great venue. It's a great venue, you know, for both the room. We get a nice large room. It's comfortable. And at night, if you want to set something up large, they'll lock the door so you won't have anyone messing with the games.
Yep. Yeah, you can leave stuff set up overnight if you want.
Yep. And there's also quite a few places to eat local.
Yeah, that was basically all I had. I'll be here for a few minutes if you want to yak after you shut this down.
Okay. Well, Doug, you have a good night.
Thank you. You too. Thanks for having me on.
Always a pleasure to have you. So, my things, my little project to improve accessibility to the client, and maybe go provide myself a little joy there when it comes to the whole, you know, I think about that and just gives me joy. The whole idea of having basically a text-based SFB battles, you know, that'd be interesting. We'll have to wait and see. I obviously got my game coming up, and hopefully we'll have a good report when it comes to that. At the very least, by next week, we'll find out exactly what is his tactics, what Justin plans to do, how he plans to wipe my ships off the board. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.